So, how are your New Year resolutions going? Did you start the year with big ideas about doing something different, being different, tackling a bad habit? Or perhaps you just don't make New Year resolutions because, well, you know they won't really last. Perhaps you feel there's nothing that needs to change. Or perhaps you did make one, but you've broken it already. After all, it is the 17th of January. There's a story that I often think about as I walk past the village green. I may have told it to you before, but it's one of those stories that is, well, it's a good story for a church that's planning to move forward. It's a good story to follow on from the covenant service that we had last week when we renewed our covenant with God. It's the story of a village where all the inhabitants were ducks. There were no people, just ducks. It's not my story. This is a story from Søren Kierkegaard, who is a Danish philosopher and theologian. Every Sunday morning, the ducks would come out of their duck houses. They would waddle down the road, go into the duck church, sit on their duck-sized pews, and the duck choir would sing. They would read from the duck Bible, and the duck minister would preach a sermon. And this Sunday, the duck minister was encouraging them to use what God had given them. "You have wings," he said. "You have wings so that you can soar like eagles. You have wings so that no fences can contain you. You have wings so that you can see things from a different perspective, so that you have wonderful views. You have wings to set you free, so that you can fly like other birds. You have wings so that you can do and be what God intended you to be." And when the sermon finished, the ducks all nodded and said, "Amen." They sang the closing duck hymn. They listened to the duck blessing. And then they waddled home just as they had come. "You have wings." But they waddled home. Not literally, but we do all do that sometimes. We listen. We agree. We believe, but for any of a thousand reasons, we don't actually change. One of the things I love about following the set lectionary readings is that so frequently it brings two passages of scripture together that you wouldn't think of putting together. You might not ever have connected the two readings that we had today. But the incredible thing about those two readings, separated by hundreds of years, one being a set really in a political sort of context, a prophecy about what God would do for his people, was doing for his people, actually. And the other, a village setting. An occasion, really, for two families, a wedding. Totally different in time and in every way. But those two readings come together. And when you look at those two readings, they both speak to us of the same incredible truths about God. That God is no different on the large scale sphere of bringing his people out of exile home, and in the context of two families sharing a wedding with the rest of their village community. They tell us the same wonderful truths about the God we made our covenant with last week. A God who doesn't change with context. We see the same amazing assurance of who God is, what God offers to us in both those stories. Firstly, we're reminded that in spite of the circumstances, God can be trusted. Those two chapters, at the final chapters at the end of Isaiah, were written when the exiles, remember, they were sent to Babylon, they had failed to be the people God wanted them to be, they had been in exile for about three generations. But now, Isaiah was prophesying that they would go home. That the land God had given them would still be theirs. And they did. They went home. But when they arrived, well, it wasn't quite all they expected. After being in exile all those years, and I'm sure they went over and over between them the stories of how God had given them that promised land, promised to them. They would have shared what happened about the exodus from slavery. That was their history. About this land flowing with milk and honey that God would offer to them. And maybe they would also share how they lost it by not being the people God wanted them to be. So when they were journeying back, can you imagine the excitement? The excitement of going to this place which was home. The excitement of going somewhere that many of them had never set eyes on. But now, they were free to live in the land that was theirs. The sheer joy and excitement of that must have been incredible. They had found that God could be utterly trusted. He had given them that land, taken it away when they had failed him, but not taken it away forever. It was their land. In spite of all they'd done, he'd kept his word. But when they arrived, it wasn't what they expected. It wasn't what they expected at all. We'll come to that in a minute. In John's Gospel, we also read that the word spoken by God, by Jesus, can be utterly trusted. It would have been a village wedding, was a huge festival event. The whole village used to come together and celebrate a wedding, and the celebrations would last for a week. Many theologians think that Mary was related to one of the families at that wedding because she was so concerned about the wine running out. And the bridegroom's family, who would be the hosts providing the feast, providing the wine, would have been incredibly embarrassed. Hospitality was of first importance in those eastern places. And so Mary tells Jesus, they're running out of wine. They're running out. Not surprising if it goes on for a week, really. And the answer of Jesus is very often misunderstood. People think the way he speaks to Mary just doesn't tie up with what they understand of Jesus. Woman, he says, what is that to you? But wait a minute. Things change, don't they? The use of the word woman is not harsh. It's not rude. Think of Jesus on the cross. What did he say? He lovingly said, woman, behold your son, when he entrusted her to the care of John. He is not being abrasive in any way. What he's saying is, leave it to me. Just don't worry yourself about it. I'll deal with it. And he did. His word could be trusted. He did what he said. So both passages speak of trust. And both passages also speak of joy. Imagine those exiles getting closer and closer to home. Imagine them sharing their memories and their hopes and their dreams. Imagine a sense of freedom. When you've been stuck, exiled in a foreign place where you don't want to be for three generations. And in John's Gospel, of course, we get the sense of hope and joy at the wedding. But life is never all joy, is it? Our expectations aren't always fulfilled. Have you ever booked a holiday somewhere beautiful with lovely scenery? Somewhere where you can explore new places, but somewhere that's peaceful, lovely, and you can just relax. And then when you get there, you find the hotel is next to a building site, or is a building site. And the workmen start terribly early in the morning. That's happened to us a couple of times. And it happened to those exiles. Oh, they'd got such pictures in their mind of going home. But when they got there, they found the place in ruins. There was so much that needed to be done. There were so many difficulties. There were so many threats. So much opposition to the rebuilding. So much obstruction. It wasn't what they'd hoped for. And at the wedding, the bridegroom's family, who would be hosts at the celebration, were wondering if perhaps they'd miscalculated the amount of wine they would need. Or maybe they'd bought all they could afford, but they just couldn't afford any more. And it wasn't enough. Joy can very often be tinged with concern. When I was, oh, I don't know, 9 or 10, I guess, when tablets were things that you took if you had a headache, you know, all those years ago. When I was 9 or 10, the thing that girls did was collect autographs. You had an autograph book, and if all of us did it, your school friends, your next door neighbours, your family, your teachers, the people at church, they all had to write something in your book. My very wise and lovely mother wrote this. She didn't compose it, but she wrote it in my book. And it has stayed with me ever since. God has not promised skies ever blue, flower-strewn pathways always for you. God has not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. But he has promised strength from above, unfailing sympathy, undying love. Our covenant God can be trusted. He is a source of joy, but he's also a source of unfailing support when trouble and disappointment come. God does something to help. Remember how when the exiles had almost given up hope of being able to rebuild, and they'd been at home for years and somehow not much had changed. And God sent Nehemiah. Do you remember that story? And Nehemiah got them organised. He got them building the wall around the city in an incredible way. Because miles and miles away, he had it on his heart that God needed him to go. They worked together and something happened. And Jesus, just as he said to Mary, Jesus more than met the need, didn't he, at the wedding? Somewhere between 120 and 180 gallons of wine would probably be enough, wouldn't it? In actual fact, it would be far more than they needed. And isn't that God's way? We may face a difficulty, but what he gives us is often far more than we dream and than we need. I think it's symbolic what Jesus did. Jesus was doing away with, the nitpicking and imperfections in the detail that the Jews had evolved in their law. And instead, he's showing them abundant grace, more than enough, the plenitude of God. So what do these two passages tell us about the God with whom we renewed our covenant last week? They tell us that he's generous. They tell us that he's utterly trustworthy. They tell us that he's the giver of hope and joy and support and strength and peace and love. And we could go on. Wow. But did you notice there was one verse in the Isaiah reading that Naomi read? A verse that said, you shall be called by a new name. You shall be called by a new name. Now, that's nothing to do with women getting married. Nothing at all. A new name in the Bible indicates a new life, a new purpose. Just think for a minute. Abram became Abraham, the father of the nation. Jacob became Israel. Simon became Peter. Saul became Paul. And with their new names, they were completely different people. to the people they'd ever dreamt that they could be before. Not just a new name, a new life. You know, many of us have renewed our covenant with God many times. Those of us who've been have got Methodism written through us like a stick of rock have done it year after year after year, and it's a very precious service. But have we experienced new life? Have we found a way to change? Has it made a difference to us? Let me leave you with one challenge and one question. The challenge is, even if you never make New Year resolutions, think about it. It's not too late. It is only the 17th of January. And all of us have got something about our lives that actually ought to be changed. None of us are perfect. So the challenge is, think again about your New Year resolutions, because they should tie in with your renewed covenant with God. And then the question for you to think about is this, and please don't take it literally. Are you going to waddle up the road home, or are you going to fly? May God help us, as the people of God in this place, to fly together.